Hello all and welcome to a new episode of Blog Tales. My name is Sarah. I'm the Managing Director of Blockchain Founders Group. And today I'm super happy that I have Emily with me. Hi.
Hello, Sarah. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
That's so nice. Yeah, so let's directly start maybe with a short introduction of yourself. I know you're already in the crypto space or in the blockchain space for a very long time, and I'm really interested in your story and in your experiences. So please let us know a little more about yourself.
Of course. So I'm Emily and I live in France at the moment. I'm originally from the UK. And I discovered crypto, Bitcoin, back in 2015. I discovered it in a co-working space in Bali, randomly. They were paying for the co-working there. And in 2016, I started working in the space and I went down the rabbit hole, as we all do. And since then, I was a marketing director, chief marketing officer, and now a coach. And without this journey, I would not be where I am right now. Without going up and down and in the Web3 space, it's very much, as you know, what's the word?
Roller coaster.
Yeah. And so, yeah, after many roller coasters, I decided to leave working in the space and instead work with the people instead. I just wanted to help the people in Web3 thrive. And so I became a coach, I requalified, and I launched my own podcast, Web3 and Thrive. I was voted Women of the Future 2022, one of, not just the only one. And I also launched my own business, Payont, which is a Web 2.5 escrow solution. In 1 year. I did all of it in 1 year.
Wow. Yeah. This is you did so many things. Maybe let's start a little at the beginning again. Yeah. So how did it work for you to really start working in the blockchain space? Because normally people sometimes read and see something, but it's not that easy, especially back in 2017 or 16, you even said, back in 2016, to really start working in that space. So what happened that you got a job?
I was aware of Bitcoin and it wasn't Web3 at the time, just crypto, because of buying it and using it to spend on the co-working space. But it was a fluke. I just fell into it. Honestly, I didn't go looking for a job. I was taking a 3-month break to do yoga at the time. And I was having a bit of like a mental health break to kind of chill and like figure out what I wanted to do next in my early 20s. And I was doing a bit of advisory work for a coffee collective in Colombia, randomly. Coffee is one of my things. And he said, hey, I've got a friend from Bitcoin.com. Do you know Bitcoin? I was like, yeah, I know Bitcoin. I know Bitcoin.com. I know Roger Ver. Tell me more. And he said, okay, let me put you in touch. So I ended up being hired by Bitcoin.com as their marketing. Not at first, because they didn't have a marketing team yet. I was the marketer for the podcast. And then I moved to being the marketing manager. And so I looked after their wallet. I looked after their events. We traveled all around the world. What else did we do? All the social media, all the product marketing. It was like an all-in-one job. Like it is kind of, back in the start of crypto, it was kind of, you are the one marketer because nobody was really spending money on marketing. Yeah.
Did you have any other women around you, or have you been like the only one?
Yeah, we had one woman and she was the events director. Yeah.
Okay. So at least you had not been the only one, but nevertheless, I think especially back in that time, there had not been so many. Okay. I know that you had been working like crazy in those times, right? So yes. How did things evolve, especially after like running around doing so many things at the same time?
Yeah. So I was with Bitcoin.com since 2016 to 2018, and there was something called the hash wars that happened in 2018. And that's when, so Bitcoin.com were very much about, I don't know if you know this, but they were not shilling, advocates of Bitcoin Cash, which was a top five, I think it was under Bitcoin at one point. And it was very much liked because it had low transaction fees and was really fast. It was kind of similar to Dash. Dash was around at the time. And at the time as well, crypto wasn't there for the tokens and all of the meme coins. There wasn't meme coins yet. We were there for use cases. That was like at the beginning. And so Bitcoin Cash had a bit of a falling out with developers. Developers like split directions, and one decided to go and build something else, and one decided to build another thing, which caused a massive market crash, huge market crash. Okay. So that's when the 2018 market crash started, and put us into a bear market for 2 years, which we came out of in 2020. But because of that, Bitcoin Cash, the holdings at Bitcoin.com were Bitcoin Cash. So obviously there was no money left because they were such advocates of the Bitcoin Cash, that there was no more jobs anymore. So we all got laid off.
Wow.
So that happened. But in the meantime, I developed alliances with a woman who'd come on board Bitcoin.com called Akane Yoku. And she was like my work BFF. She was basically the merchant advisor. So she used to go around Tokyo because Bitcoin.com is in Tokyo, in kind of near Shibuya. And she used to go around all the big merchants, like the bars, the restaurants, getting them to accept crypto. And I went to visit her at Bitcoin.com, and everywhere was accepting crypto. Like, you could pay for everything. It was amazing. It was really cool. And so we kind of formed an alliance to kind of help women come into the space, or at least feel supported. So we started, when we were going to events and stuff, we created little necklaces with Bitcoin on, and just started to give them to people. We had them made in the Philippines because we had another contact in the Philippines. We made an e-commerce platform that supported, I'm just going to turn this WhatsApp off 1 second, sorry. And we made an e-commerce platform that supported these smaller merchants so they could accept crypto if they didn't have in-house POS systems. And we helped them make the swaps. So we were kind of doing it in like being clunky and scrappy and trying to give these female entrepreneurs a solution at the time. And it didn't work out in the end because it's difficult to make money that way. You're just hustling, trying to help people. But in the end, we both went in and decided, okay, we want to progress in our careers. I love leading people and supporting teams. Okay, so I went off in one direction, she went off in another, but we stayed besties. We're still besties. So it's nice. And so I went to work in the exchanges because I was like, okay, I know all about the merchant adoption side, but I don't know anything about the trading side. So let's go and learn that. That's what I did next.
So this was like your first own startup, what you kind of tried to grow or to start?
Yeah, I've been an entrepreneur before in the past. I was always a consultant. So, and that's what I loved about Bitcoin.com. It was never, you're not an employee, you're an independent contributor. No one was employed. They wanted to keep your sovereignty, which is awesome. Since I was 21, I've always been a consultant, always do my own invoices on my own taxes. So I've always kind of had clients. But before that, I had a street food company in the UK.
Food, so something totally different. Yeah, so this was before the Bali trip, right?
Yes, this was when I was 19, 18, 19, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So you started pretty early with building your own companies and things.
Yeah.
Oh, this is really impressive. I think it's super hard to grow and build things on your own, but nice. Okay, how long did you work on the thing with the necklaces and the women supporting?
That was a year and a bit. Year, and it overlapped with the next job. So we kept on kind of doing it. And that was cool because we went to a really cool event called, it was a very controversial event. If you Google it, there's many articles about how controversial it was, but it's called Coins Bank Cruise, and that was 2018. And basically, there was John McAfee there, for example. We gave his wife a necklace. She always used to tweet about us. We used to see her at all the other events because she was a very strong female. So it kind of like we were dotting around everywhere giving out these necklaces. Sidetracked. I always go off on one. But anyway, so that was kind of when we stopped giving them, when we started going full time into different work.
Okay. Nice. Really interesting. Okay. So, and then before you now really started your coaching business, what happened in between?
So in between, I worked very hard and managed to secure like head of global marketing roles. So I worked for Liquid.com, which was one of the most respected, it's not here anymore, but it's one of the most respected exchanges in Asia. They were all about institutional traders. And I learned so much. It was the most amazing experience. I was living in Saigon at the time in Vietnam, and I was just immersed. So because I'd been working on it actually. In between all this, I was working as a consultant for different startups. So, for example, I worked for, Medium.
Yeah.
So we were trying to build a new Medium on the Bitcoin Cash blockchain.
Web3 environment.
So I was doing all that. And they were interested in like my entrepreneurship, I guess. And so I came into the team kind of like undercover because I'd identified that, because I'm always looking at products and how it's working, I'd identified that their deposit flow was not working. So they were spending a huge amount of money at the top of the funnel and they were not getting any traction. No deposits, no buying of crypto. They were just losing people. People were never activating their accounts. And I was like, you need to stop this advertising right now. You actually need to like cut down your team. You've got way too many people not doing anything. And you need to like get super lean. And so I came on and kind of made all these adjustments. And then it was a difficult time because we had to like fire a few people, but we got to a stage where their retention was at 8% and we got it to 60%.
Wow, so
it was
amazing.
It was awesome. It was a very, it was a very strategic streamline of processes. And I loved it because I got to be immersed with the product team and I kind of like teamed up with the head of product and he taught me everything, like how to manage developers, how to get on the level of them, how to communicate your briefs to them. So I could understand what he was doing. So if he was way too busy, I could then step in as the person between the developers as well. So I could get what I needed for the marketing team. So that was a really amazing experience actually.
Did you also learn to code a little in that area or in that time?
I was like, I don't want to code. No. I learned how to write. Yeah, no, I don't need to code. But the most important thing is helping them understand what needs to be built and the user stories, the edge cases. So what could happen in all situations? Like, and it's just constantly like you may be going for a run and you're like, wait, I haven't thought of this edge case. Quick, I need to write it down. It's like all these things that could happen in the product that you don't think about.
I understand. But you said that the company is not existing anymore, right?
No. So what happened is I left about a year and a half later, I think it was. I went to, I got poached by OKX and AAX as a contractor.
So many stages or so yeah. many different experiences and roles in yeah. your life. I think you, wow, yeah. I'm really
It's
impressed.
Fun. Oh, thank you. Okay. It's just all these things just happen. But no, it was good though, because I'd had this really amazing result with the exchange. Yes. Then other people are like, wait, how have you done this? Like, we can't figure it out. And all at the time, all the exchanges were struggling with the same problem. So I was like, I can just make it easier and do the same of what I've just done for these guys. It's very simple. But yeah, so did that. And then Liquid, what happened? They got hacked after I left. There was some big drama. Yeah. And then they got acquired by FTX. And then obviously FTX went down. Yeah.
Okay, so more or less, you jumped at the right point of time.
Yes, always, always at the right point. Because then, OKX, I came on board when their founder went to prison, and I was part of the crisis team. I did a post about this recently. I was part of the crisis team to help them handle the global side. That was not my role at all. But I was like, I've handled crisis before, lawsuits, everything, so I'll come and help. And then AAX also went under because they were attached. Their liquidity was attached to FTX.
Wow. Okay, super crazy, crazy stories.
Yeah.
But this is part of the Web3 of the blockchain space that things happen. You have to handle crisis. You have to, know how to stay mentally healthy and how to, proceed, especially in super pressing and difficult situations.
Exactly.
And I think, or maybe you can tell us how you would, at the end decided to become a coach for Web3 because what I experience especially is like in the Web3 space, it's crazy because there are like so many things, so many different channels and tons of news. And you can literally spend the whole day reading in different kind of channels and it's super hard. And to be honest, I saw some people being online a lot. And at a certain point of time, I didn't receive any messages from them anymore. Mm-hmm. So I think it's kind of getting too much, especially in that space. I don't know whether this was like your beginning or your decision. But of course, I'm super curious about, why you decided to become a coach. And
yeah,
what are your experiences?
Yeah, so I actually, after the exchanges, I made a real intentional decision. I want to leave the exchanges. This is not negotiable. I didn't find it interesting anymore, and I found it too toxic. It was just grind culture. And as much as I
think because of the people, or because of the work culture, or because of
the work culture, and the team structure was not like the team. It's in like the hierarchical structure, because I worked with lots of Asian exchanges, remember, very different to Western industry. So it was difficult to adopt to. And in the end, I was like, you know what? This is a headache. Like, I just want to focus on building a solid team who are supported, who would do good work, and we get results. And that feeds into a bigger goal for the company. But it just doesn't work like that. So I got good results, but at the end I was like, no, there's no work-life balance here. I don't want to do this anymore. So I left, and then I worked in portfolio companies as a fractional CMO instead, which is easier. It was kind of like, okay, so you've got 5 companies. These ones want to go to market in like the next 3 months. I'm going to help them hire, build strategy, be their advisor, and then I'm going to move on to the other one. So that's what I did for the rest of the time in Web3.
It sounds that you're working in this space already since I don't know, maybe 20 years, but you said you started 2016, mm-hmm. So it's only 7 years.
It's not
years.
That long. Exactly. And it's like, usually in the Web2 world, it's like you stay at somewhere long term, but it's not possible sometimes. Like, you just cannot in this space, because one, they obliterate themselves. 2, the structure's so bizarre that it doesn't work anymore. And 3, everyone gets laid off. So you have to like really focus flexible. On what you want. Yeah, flex.
And, yeah. I think especially that part about being flexible in your mind, being not scared, mm-hmm. being not afraid is super hard, especially if people are used to the Web3 world. And I can tell you about my personal experience. I mean, I was with BMW for 9 years, and this was super safe because I could have stayed there maybe for the rest of my life. I don't know. But it was scary for me to say, okay, I leave. I do something totally different. But for me, it was always freedom was security. Mm-hmm. And I was always fighting with those two different areas in my life. And at the end, I decided to work in a different space with more freedom, with more challenges, with more options. But it wasn't that easy.
No, it's never easy, and it's very difficult, because especially going from I know I'm going to get a monthly paycheck to I don't know if I'm going to get paid at all. Yeah. I know you're meant to be interviewing me, but for you, what made that transition easier for you?
For me, so there was one super important, so I was talking to many people, and there was one sentence, and I mean, quite often it is like at the end, there's one thing that changes your mind. And for me, that was, I was talking to a guy, and he told me, I should not focus only, because I always focused on the negative side, so on what could happen in the worst case. Mm-hmm. And he said once, I should also focus on all the chances and on all the possibilities and on the potential upside. And this was for me like, okay, now I see it. Now I see all those possibilities. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, okay, I need to at least try to grab them. And this was for me the biggest change.
That's amazing.
Open my mind on the positive side and see those possibilities. And then it was clear, like, okay, I need to go there. I just do it.
That's really amazing self-work, though, because changing a neural pathway like that from going, your old track is like, no, this is not going to work. Everything's going to fail, la, la, la. That's like one track to what's the opportunity here? That's a new track. So it's, you should be very proud of yourself for being able to put in that work.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much. So what is, because I think especially the coaching part is like super interesting. What are your experiences? What are people struggling with? Why did you decide to do the coaching? Because I was also for a certain point of time thinking about doing some coaching business. So from the business perspective as a coach, mm-hmm. but for me, it was super hard to always deal with the problems from people. And of course, people normally only come to you if they already have a lot of problems. So only some people think about preventional coaching. Most mm-hmm. of them come to you if there is already a huge problem.
Yes.
And so I'm super interested in your experiences and your thoughts on that
topic. So I actually started coaching because I've been coaching inadvertently, I guess, people my entire life. That was always my role as a person. And I went on a big journey. I decided, okay, if I don't want to be in marketing, I don't want to be in working in Web3 anymore, what do I want to do? And so I hired my own coach to help me figure it out. I'm very spiritual. So I do a lot of self-work. I do a lot of meditation and walking and yoga. And it was a bit, I think it took me 2 months or something, like a full time out, time off, like no work, focus on what is next. And where do I want to be? What's the purpose? And I really got really drilled down on what is the goal? And the goal is similar to you, I need flexibility. I need freedom with finances. I want to go do what I want, when I want. And I also want to be able to create this life with my family where we have time together. There's lots of energy. I'm doing all this self-work. Okay, how do I create that? I want to work for myself. I don't want to work in a business. I don't want to be a consultant. And I also, how do I tie in this need to help people with this life? And it was like, okay, coaching. Coaching is a business model that really fits. I love speaking, especially to women, speaking to them and helping them work through things that it's obvious sometimes when they discover what's going on, but they're completely blind to it. They have full blind spots.
I know. It's yeah. So hard to understand, especially if you work a lot, there's no way you can go out and mm-hmm. see problems on your own.
Exactly. And I have really powerful, successful women in both Web 2 and Web 3, because a lot of the time they're coming over to Web 3, they've maybe just started and they're struggling. And they're so successful on the outside on paper, but inside they feel like they're like a timid child. They're scared of failure. They're scared of getting fired all the time. They never feel good enough. They never feel like they can challenge their peers. They never feel like they're going to get anywhere. And I've helped women. Sorry, you go first.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know whether you want to answer it, but did you be or have you experienced similar feelings as well, like going through
yes.
the process?
And that's the bit we missed out, actually. So I had like a full on burnout, which is the reason why I decided to leave the space. It was an accumulation of lots of things. And in the end, I was like, this is not feeding my soul anymore. This is making me depressed and sad and taking away energy from me. And in the end, I went through, I don't know how woo-woo your listeners are, I went through a bit of a spiritual awakening during that time. And it was just like, no, this is gone. That chapter needs to close. There's a lot more things going to happen now. Like there's a way huger opportunity here in terms of self-fulfillment, I would say. And so I had to go through the hard stuff. And I was the same. So I, especially when I went to the first exchange, that was my first job working with such a big company and a lot of men. There was the women, because I was in Vietnam, the women were the ones who were in the customer support team, for example. There was no women in, yeah, obviously. There was no women in leadership roles. And so I used to get talked over all the time. I remember being like really nervous in specific meetings with people who I felt intimidated by, all men. Never got a word in ever. And so at the time I actually got a mentor. Actually, Amber, the person we were talking to before, she was my mentor. And she was like, fuck those assholes. You can do what you want, whenever you want. This is what you need to do. And so she really helped me. And I had her voice in the back of my head quite often. And that got me through. And I stepped up. Like it was like, okay. I'm on the same level as these guys. Yes, maybe they're 50 year old or whatever. And I'm like, how old was I at the time? 29. I deserve
you also
to be
have
here.
Like one or, so sorry to interrupt, yeah. But this is like, do you also have like one or two of those super important sentences that had always been in your mind or in your head, like helping you to go through that period in your life?
Yeah, it's like a lot of the time, a lot of us have the narrative that we're not good enough, and it comes from parts of our childhood or wherever it was imprinted. And so it was a lot of, I am good enough and I deserve to be here. I'm good enough and I deserve to be here every day. And it was just like, if I don't tell me that, no one else is going to tell me that. So I have to be my own biggest fan. And it worked out. And I don't think if I hadn't got a mentor and I hadn't worked on myself in that moment and those few months, I would not have had the successes that I had following that. And I was able to deal with people and deal with the personalities, deal with the crisis that always happened, staying calm, creating a bubble around my team to make sure that they were looked after. All of it accumulated to that. And I think a lot of the time I struggled with overwhelm because it was just constant, like constant stuff coming at me all the time. And so I kind of formed my own little way of dealing with overwhelm, a bit like a framework. And that's actually what I use with my clients. It's like Emily's framework.
Understand. Wow. I like what you're saying. And yeah, really, really, I think nearly everybody is touched by similar things like, am I enough? Can I fulfill this position? Am I good enough? Mm-hmm. So it's super hard to always, know the right way, know the right things to do.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you for sharing. And
you're welcome.
Now you're in the coaching business.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. It's amazing. I love it. It's like the best decision I ever made. It was very much a guided decision, if you're spiritual. And I get to now work with people who are, sometimes they're not as far as that. They're not in paralysis analysis and they're not procrastinating all day, but they know that something is blocking them from doing what they need to do, either in the career or the business. And so they come to me, and a lot of the time, what they want is different to what they need, like very different, actually. So what they want is authority, to be heard, be a thought leader, to be successful in their job. But what they need is inner child work, shadow work, understanding how to rewire the narrative in the head, how to be nicer to themselves, how to create a family environment that supports their career. These are all the things they need, but they don't see that. That's at the surface level are the wants, and underneath are the needs.
So it's like there's somebody coming to you telling, and she is telling you what she expects, mm-hmm. and what she thinks that she needs. And mm-hmm. then you're going to have like a first coaching session, and at the end, it turns out that the things you're working on are totally different than what she's expecting.
Exactly.
And then you really start your work, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. And for each, so the way it works with me is usually it's 3 to 6 months, and I advise for any kind of full transformation. So a lot of the time, the first 3 months are like undoing things and like getting all the low hanging fruit. Okay, what can we do now? And then the next 3 months is building and focus on the growth. And so we get, sometimes people come to me in the very glass half empty mindset. And so we tackle these kind of things first, and they're like low hanging fruit, and they come up in the conversation really quickly. So it's like they'll maybe apologize for stuff too much, or they will talk about how they'd never have time to do anything. Okay, so all these things are like triggers. Like I basically listen really deeply, and all the words that come up are like trigger. Okay, where do you want to start? I noticed that you told me that you don't have enough time. Is it true? And we go through
questioning whether things are true. Mm-hmm. This is something that triggers something for me as well, because mm-hmm. I was also reading some things, trying to understand things in a better way, and really always questioning, is it true what I'm thinking at the moment, mm-hmm. or is it not?
So exactly.
Do you have some, maybe it's a hard question, but maybe do you have some advice if people are listening now, and like we know nearly everybody is struggling, but some people are more, some people are less, some people want to talk about things, other don't, because they think it's, I don't need it, I don't want, I don't have time, whatever. But do you have some advice for people, especially in the Web3 space, fast changing environment, mm-hmm. That might help to have a clear focus and to stay with yourself?
Yes. So I would say number one is, why are you here? What's the intention? Okay. Because if you don't know why you're here, you're running around for other people.
That's true.
Yeah.
And then always other people put you or push you in certain directions, and the mm-hmm. directions might change quite fast. And then there's never a clear road, and you're kind of running from A to B to C.
Exactly. So once you've got clear on the why, like Simon Sinek says, then you need to figure out where is the attention actually going. So this is a tool that I actually use with my clients, is an attention audit. So you have a piece in, I think I did a LinkedIn post about this, maybe you have a piece of paper, and on one side it says personal and the other side it says business or work, and you have 100 units, and those 100 units have to spread out over 1 week, and those 100 units are your attention units. And I, like, you can use units, but I like to say energy. This is where your energy is going. And so you'd quickly write out all the things that you do in your personal life, and then you'll quickly write out all the stuff that's happening in your career, and then you put numbers to it. And it's very difficult, and you have to be very true of yourself. Okay, so actually it's 80% of my time going on responding to Slack messages. No way. Because those units have to stretch between personal and work, not just, you don't have 100 per each. It's like all over.
Yeah, got it.
Yeah. And that's a big eye-opener.
And I can imagine that a lot of people tend to have, I don't know, like you just said, maybe the 80% or the 80 units on mm-hmm. the work side and maybe only 20% on the personal mm-hmm. side. And so,
yeah. And they, yeah, and then they come to me with the, because I usually send them, I'm like, go do this, this is your homework. And they come back to me, and we were like, wow, when do you breathe? Like, when do you do anything for yourself? When do you see your family? When do you exercise, get outside? And they're like, I know. And I said, okay, so next homework, go and write down the ideal. Where do you want the energy to go? And they do that. And it's usually very different to what the reality is. And they're like, yeah, but I don't know how to do this. I'm like, okay. So then the next step is figuring out what are your non-negotiables in life? What will you absolutely say yes to and absolutely say no to? And that's the next step.
This is super interesting. I once was trying to figure out what are my values in life. And like I learned that there are like three different kind of values. And the inner core values, these are, like you said, the non-negotiable values.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry, I can't pronounce that word. Like these are like the most important things. You can't live without those values. If they are kind of disturbed or broken or whatever, it doesn't work. And then mm-hmm. you have the values that make your life livable, like nice and like mm-hmm. enjoyable. And then you have the third area values that are not that important to yourself, and it's super helpful to really know them. So this is, for example, something that I did once. So
yeah, no, it's really worth doing. I've done the values as well, like personal values, and so mine is, I can't remember exactly what I wrote down, but it's time, control of my own energy, and integrity. I think it's something along those lines. I used to have a list of five. I have to get them out actually. And my non-negotiables are things like, I will not walk the dogs until I've taken care of me. So I used to be the other way around, and I was rushing to get the dogs out the door because they were having a breakdown, and then I'm rushing into the day. And I switched it about 3 years ago, and I now do at least 10 minutes of sun salutations. I do breath work. I do meditation, maybe some journaling, and then we take the dog out. When we're all calm, then we have breakfast and we have a tea or a coffee. And it's like, so I always have that routine. And then another non-negotiable is I don't take calls after 6 p.m. ever. It doesn't matter if it's like the queen. No.
I like that you're so clear and so strict with some of your rules. This is just so important. I like that a lot. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. And if you take, so if you take those three things, then you start to make space. You're like, okay, what do I spend my time on? What do I want to spend my time on? And then you could go down the whole framework stuff. So like I have, I can send you the link afterwards, actually. It's a tool that people can use to then figure out, okay, so I do need to do all this stuff, right? Well, what's the system I'm going to use to do it?
Yes,
it needs to be easy, sure. It needs to be quick to do, but I need some kind of process. Otherwise, I'm just going to say yes to this, and I'm going to be all over the place again. So it's all kind of these, I do this in like the logical fashion. So we start off the big wide why, the non-negotiables, the attention audit, and then we go down to what do you need to do right now.
Wow. I think this is a journey everybody should do, because it helps for the rest of your life. If you're clear about those things, it's always easier, especially to make mm-hmm. decisions and to live your life to the fullest if you're clear about that. Yeah, thank you so
exactly.
much for sharing.
You're so welcome.
Yeah. So there's one more thing I really would like to also, I mean, if you have further thoughts on the leadership and coaching part, mm-hmm. please let me know. But I also quickly want to talk about Payant, because you are founding a company at the same time as well. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious about what you're doing there, because it's not only the coaching, it's also building a startup. So two things at the same time.
Yeah. So I, in November last year, 2022, I had a big urge, like a big gut feeling that I needed to build something. And so I never ignore my gut feeling. And I'm really good at building products. Like, this is just me, big head, but well, no, maybe not good. I'm confident that I can build good products with people. And so it was a problem that I'd had for many years, which was getting paid on time and getting paid as a contractor, because contractors get paid last. And if you get paid in crypto, then that's a lift, a heavy lift, and people are not going to always remember to do it. And I had to chase companies for years to get bloody paid, somewhere like 6 months trying to get paid for a big amount of money. And everyone has to deal with this quite often in our industry, especially if you're an agency, that's the worst. But if you're a small freelancer and you're trying to chase like $500, but you need that $500, it's not fair.
It's hard.
Right?
Yeah.
And so I'm big on making sure people get paid on time. And so I tried to find a solution that was already available because I believe there's no point doing things twice if it's going to be the same. And so a bit like the layer ones, don't really get that. all of the layer ones in the space. But so I decided to build my own. I had infrastructure support from David Atkinson, who's my advisor. And Bridget also supported me a little bit with the business structure. And I brought on my fiance, I'm now co-founder, Antoine.
That's been so amazing that you're doing this together.
Yeah, I didn't think we could do it together, but to be honest, we've worked well together in the past. We've managed projects together, and he's an entrepreneur as well. So, and he works with Quadency.com. They're like algo trading platform, bots and stuff. And he's been doing that for 4 years. So he's a product manager. He's good at building stuff. And so we decided to get this Web 2.5 escrow solution built. And that was an idea. And now it's an MVP and we are ready to roll. We're just doing the final bits like audits, getting all the last checks and fixes done before we release it to the public.
Okay, so how long do you think it will take until you're really launching?
I think, well, we get married in July, so it's kind of like,
we need to get everything done.
Thank you. But yeah, maybe I'm thinking my goal is middle of June. That's the goal I've put on everybody. We've got three developers now working on it, and Antoine. And the reason I manage to balance everything is because Antoine leads everything at the moment. So I'm building relationships, partnerships, prepping for the launch, and he's kind of doing all the day-to-day stuff for me.
Wow, nice. Mm-hmm. And then people can use your platform to ensure that, especially with small amounts, freelancer, mm-hmm. people who, not the huge companies, mm-hmm. that they ensure that they get their money in time.
Exactly. All it is you're a contractor. You ask the client in the platform, we have an invoicing and quote system. They send a quote. They say, hey, this is how much it's going to cost you. The client says, okay, it's all on chain. So it's all verified and it's very easy to use. That's the biggest thing. It's not like you do need to understand how to use a wallet at the moment, but you won't need to in a few months' time. It's going to be fiat as well. So you send the quote, the client approves it. You do the work. He sends the money. It's in the escrow in the smart contract. It's not accessible from anyone. We can't even access it. And then when you deliver, they verify that you've delivered what you said you're going to deliver, and then the funds are released. And we also have full customer support. We're building decentralized mediation system, all sorts of stuff.
Nice. So crossed fingers that first you will be able to launch Payant, and afterwards you have still enough time to prepare everything for your marriage. But I'm pretty sure you prepared already a lot.
Yeah, it's funny because Regan, I don't know if you know Regan, who's like my partner in crime, actually. We do everything together. She's also getting married at the same time, like around the same time. So we're just doing it. We're managing it all together.
You can share all the work and always ask, did you already do that? Did you already do that? And so
she reminded me this morning. We had a big call this morning about life and not about work at all. And she's like, wait, have you done this? I was like, no. Do I need to do this? She's like, yeah. I was like, okay, wait, I'll do that. I'll add that to the list. Yeah, it's good.
So nice. Emily, thank you so much for taking
you
time.
You too.
It was amazing. Thank you for your advices. Thank you for sharing your thoughts. And thank you for sharing your story, which is really a special one because you're in that space already for a super long time. You changed a lot. And you, I think, finally found the thing that you are super happy with. And what a great journey, I guess. Thank you for sharing everything with us.
Thank you so much for having me. And amazing questions.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Love.